Another funny thing that has existed on the internet is liberals saying that the press secretary is too hot.
Oh, that she dressed inappropriately?
Dude, they had a fucking trans woman pull her titties out at the White House.
They had
shut the fuck up.
Trump is bringing in the cabinet more maverick than a Tom Cruise, John McCain love child. And with EOs kicking up more of a flurry than what's been up Hunter Biden's nose. Today we're covering the RFK, Tulsi, and Cash confirmations. Plus, in the skiff, we'll be going over some of those executive orders.
Everybody, welcome back to Human Reaction. We're glad to have you here. Before we get started, please smash the like button and subscribe on YouTube, wherever you're listening to this show. Please join our Discord as well. We got incredible conversation and all that sort of thing, don't we, Kyle?
Yeah, and also leave a comment for us down below. Let us know, because we're going to be going over the confirmation hearings that happened here, and let us know, who do you think is going to get through? Is Joe going to be right on his bingo card? It doesn't look like it.
Hold on now. The jury is still out, okay? The Trump administration has time. We've got, what, 7 senators that are seem to be blocking Tulsi's confirmation from the right. So we have 7 Republicans that just need a lot of pressure. So it's time for the Trump administration to go scorched earth on these people and threaten them every way they can. Because if I don't get Tulsi and we do get Cash, then I'm completely opposite and I lose 2 bingo slots here. Man. So
there has been, like, in the rumor mill, as Trump advisors behind the scenes are saying, that scorched earth on any Republican senator that's doesn't go for Tulsi or RFK. So
it's fair game. And I know Nicole Shanahan came out very strongly and said she would fund primary challengers against anybody who voted against Bobby Kennedy. So
the outside pressure is real. I mean, it's a big one. But the question is it enough? Senators, 6-year terms, you know, it depends on when the next election is. That's a long time from the next election for a lot of them. So we'll see.
Yeah. If you are a small business owner looking for exponential growth, you have to connect with Adam Thune at Intellectual Patriots. He will revolutionize your business game and help you get to the next level. Adam can streamline your business practices and advertising strategies to improve your bottom line. His expertise in data engineering means he can build you the systems you need to collect and analyze market data. His mission is to provide you with invaluable insights to fuel your success. From grant writing and business proposals to digital systems integrations, even AI management, Intellectual Patriots is a one-stop shop for cutting-edge solutions. Don't wait another second. Visit intelpatriots.com to learn more. That's intelpatriots.com. This episode is brought to you by Revved Up Promo, the official apparel partner of Human Reaction. Revved Up is a premier full-service shop specializing in laser engraving, screen printing, and embroidery. Not only are they now making all of our apparel right down the road from us, they can do the same for your brand and ship it to you anywhere in the world. Revved Up helps you navigate the extensive universe of merch options and uses state-of-the-art techniques to showcase your brand in its very best light. So if you want to support our show and our generous sponsor, you can now do so by buying our merch and by turning to Revved Up Promo for your own custom apparel needs. Reach them at RevvedUpPromo.com. That's with 2 V's and 2 P's, or just check the show notes for a link. Well, let's get into it. First hearing, RFK Jr.
Well, who the hell is that guy anyways?
Who is that guy?
Yeah, environmental lawyer, political figure known for his activism against corporate and government overreach, and specifically in this case on vaccines as a major feature of it. And that was a large part of this because he's being appointed for the health department, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the confirmation was largely seemed to center around the role of science and his perspective on vaccines. Whether it's pro-vax or anti-vax, does that mean you're pro-science if you're anti-vax? That sort of thing.
Yeah,
it is interesting watching the rise of RFK, because pre-COVID he was wacky conspiracy kook, kind of black sheep of the family, and now he's champion of the MAGA movement.
Based Chad RFK.
Based Maha Chad movement. RFK. the splinter group outside of the MAGA movement, the MAHA movement,
Is it a splinter group? Is it a subgroup?
Subgroup, yeah.
What's the best way to visualize it? I think it's more of like a contingency, or not like a contingent.
I prefer visualizing with Venn diagrams. I'm like Kamala in that way.
Well, I mean, I think there's a good case to be made that, I mean, the female vote, the youth vote, a lot of these things are, you know, were brought in by Maha in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
He's inspired a lot of people. Like, a lot of people in my life have been very inspired by him, people that I would have never thought would be inspired by him. A lot of people who I know used to constantly call him a wacky kook are now like full blown Maha. It's like he managed to convince a lot of people over the last 2 years.
For sure. Well, I think, I mean, the COVID pandemic certainly turned a lot of people in the direction of, hey, you know, this research that I'm seeing doesn't match the narratives that I'm hearing on the news, and where can I go to sort of like align these two things? And RFK had, and the whole constituency on that sort of, you know, I don't want to say anti-vax because that's a stupid term, but on that side of the argument had the more coherent argument around all this stuff. Mm-hmm.
So I guess let's get into some of these clips, because these hearings, like for all three of them.
Buckle up, everybody. Yeah,
buckle up. It's just a lot of political stunts, a lot of Democrats pretending to know the science.
Grandstanding, which I think is the right way to describe it.
Which is the clip that we're going to start off with right here.
Because sometimes science is wrong. We make progress. We build on the work and we become more successful. And when you continue to sow doubt about settled science, it makes it impossible for us to move forward. Because sometimes
science is both settled and unsettled at the same time.
Yeah.
It's unique and it mutates.
It can be wrong, but sometimes it isn't wrong. What point is she making?
Great question. I feel like that's one of those moments where she lost her train of thought right in the middle of the statement. She's just like,
which side of this argument am I on?
Yeah, that is Senator Hockenlooper.
Hickenlooper?
No, that's Hassan.
Yeah.
I think
so. Oh, you're right. We're seeing the wrong one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's Hassan. Okay. I was like, Hickenlooper is a guy. He's from Colorado. But,
oh, yeah. That was the wrong mic. Yeah. But
yeah, could not be just a less compelling statement. Couldn't be.
She really owned him with that one.
Yeah, got him.
Got him.
Okay, so like that just begs the question, what is science? What is it? Like what are we talking about when we say that the science is subtle?
It's a deity, David, don't you know?
Well, we worship it.
We worship it in this country.
There's a way to think about it. Yeah.
That's what it's become, right? Like that's the thing that opened up so many people's eyes during COVID is just like, oh, the elite people, like the specialists in these very specific fields, say this, but then there was like also these other groups that were also saying this other thing, and you weren't allowed to hear from them, and it kind of like threw everybody that paid attention to that. They're just sitting there like, wait, I can't trust these people that are coming from these government institutions talking about this stuff. But like these people 2 years later, it seemed like they were right, and they're like, what is the science? Like when people are throwing this like, you have to trust the science, or Fauci, I am the science. Yeah right.
I am the law.
When you're questioning me, you're questioning the science.
You're full of shit today.
Well, and dude, just the term the science makes me want to put a do bad things.
Yeah.
that is the deification of it. Well, it's a deification of what is not necessarily the scientific method, which is what we've kind of come to, like establishing hypotheses, having questions, coming to things where we think they're true, but there might be, you know, like it's not necessarily law. There might be anomalies that exist, you know, like we come, like there's a whole process behind it. Instead, we're just like, nope, this is it. And it's a one size fits all solution for everything. And
well, really what has changed is that like the assumption that like the scientific method is the pursuit of truth, but we're assuming that science in this context still means we're seeking the truth. But science has been so thoroughly captured, as we see in these hearings, right? When we have senators like Hassan and Bennett and others, no relation, fortunately. No relation.
Yeah,
he spells it wrong.
Yeah, he's single T. He's low T.
Yeah.
he's a low T Bennett.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
But when we see these people making these just ridiculous statements, and then we can compare that with the amount of money that each one of these people has gotten from Big Pharma, and we hear that they're just up there just pounding their fist in defense of pharmaceuticals against Bobby Kennedy, it's so clear that the science is not the pursuit of truth. It's the pursuit of whatever is going to protect their special interests.
Especially when it comes to replication. I mean, science itself is a methodology, as Kyle was saying. It's an approach to, it's a strategy for getting at rules of the natural world and how things interact by breaking them apart and looking at their subcomponents. It isn't the only approach, but it is a approach and an important approach for the Western world. The deification of it is when you set your highest aim at that. You put all your focus on it as the authority figure, in the process, that process becomes the authority figure rather than understanding the process. And the key part of this process that seems to be is how are different groups affected by the same input? And we had this interesting part of the debate with, I don't remember the senator's name, also Brooks?
Seems right. From what I can
also
read.
Brooks.
Also Brooks.
Yeah, yeah, also, yeah. On vaccine effects on black people and recommendations for black people when it comes to vaccines.
You were on a show on February 26, 2021, an interview with Dr. Judy Mikovits, where you said the following, and I quote, "We should not be giving black people the same vaccine schedule that's given to whites because their immune system is better than ours." Can you please explain what you meant?
There's a series of studies, I think most of them by Poland, that show that to particular antigens that blacks have a much stronger reaction. There's differences in reaction to different products by different races.
So I have 17 seconds left. Let me just ask you then. So what different vaccine schedule would you say I should have received?
I mean, the Pollen article suggests that blacks need fewer antigens.
Dangerous.
You get the same measles vaccine.
Mr. Kennedy, with all due respect, that is so dangerous. Your voice would be a voice that parents would listen to. Dangerous. I will be voting against your nomination because your views are dangerous to our state and to our country.
I mean, do you think science is dangerous, Senator? This is published peer-reviewed studies.
I yield.
She yields.
I also hate the, like, you ask him a question and then he's 3 seconds into explaining it and then she moves on to the next question. Yeah. Like, that's the thing I hate about these hearings where you're just like, it's so clearly not about what he actually says and it's so clearly like clip farming for the senators
for sure.
And things like that.
And I think that that's a format problem. And I mean, I understand they don't have all the time in the world. They got a lot of business to do. They got a lot of these hearings to have.
No, they don't. They have fundraising calls to make.
Great. Okay. Thank you for validating my suspicion that they don't actually have a lot of things to do. I'm just trying to give them the benefit of the
doubt. Congress doesn't pass laws. Keep that in mind.
but the sick part of this one exchange particularly is that, like, I mean, he's just laying out what research has suggested. It's not like this is his opinion, mm-hmm. right? So he's not being a racist in this moment. And the other part of it is, like, it's a very valid thing. It's like, okay, if your immune system is more strongly reacts to an input like an adjuvant or something like that and doesn't need as much stimulus to prompt the immune response that you want to get from a vaccine, then you should take a lesser dose of it to get as much as you need, but not more, because what happens when you get more, you overactivate your immune system and then that creates allergies. It creates, you know, like autoimmune problems, all sorts of complications that are damaging to the human body. So what he's really trying to say is we are harming the black community more so than the white community by giving them the same vaccine schedule that we give other races that don't have this same type of immune response. Right.
Yeah, like assuming that this peer review study is true. Like he's just like throwing out this idea like, hey, look, there's this peer review study that says this. Maybe we should look at that. Maybe we should take that into consideration.
So why is that dangerous? Why is that dangerous? Because it treats different groups differently?
It's the difference between individualized medicine and group medicine. The problem with that is the composition problem, right? Your individual groups within the overall population might react differently. So how do you tailor medicine to the individual? We got to develop the technology to do that. Right?
But we also have to have
the understanding.
But we also have to have the spine culturally to be able to say that different people need different things.
Well, you can see the media strategy up front too. Obviously, what she's trying to do is frame him as some kind of racist by saying that black people have a stronger immune system than white people do.
You can see the way she takes off her glasses and tries to do it. She's like, huh?
You know she practiced that in the mirror for sure. She's like, this is my moment.
This is for the donors.
A couple episodes ago, that guy talking about the AI.
Yeah, I was actually just going to bring that up. That was part of the AI conversation.
But everybody freaked out about it.
We can go in and genetically sequence to each individual and get them the accurate thing. So it doesn't have to be this like one size fits all solution. Everybody can have their very specific vaccines according to what their body kind of requires.
For sure. And the underlying error there is
using
AI is that the average of a population distribution is what will work for everybody within that distribution. But that's a fallacy. The average only works for the average.
Right.
Right. Which is actually a minority of the overall population because you have a big population curve. You just take that average. You're actually removing everybody else. And that's where vaccine injury has become so obvious to everybody else except for the people who are in public health who don't care, who say those are worth it in order to get the overall population effect.
Yeah.
And that's but people are missing this part of the discussion, which is, well, what about the individual? Right? What about the person who is injured by this? And that's where this conflict is happening.
Well, and the problem is in the framing. It's public health, not individual health.
Right. Right.
Then we got our boy Bernie.
Yeah. Oh. This is the best own of all the hearings.
There were some good Bernie clips in there.
But as far as for the candidate pushing back, this was the best one.
Yeah, here he is.
President Trump and Mr. Kennedy are quite right when they say that our system is broken. They're right. Our economic system today is broken. Three people own more wealth than the bottom half of American society. Wages have been stagnant for American workers for 50 years.
We have to go through the economy same lecture every single
is
day.
Broken. You know what?
He's on
our political system is broken and corrupt. You have a handful of billionaires in both political parties who contribute huge amounts of money to elect candidates in this room throughout the United States Congress. That is a broken political system and a real threat to democracy.
Great posture, by the way.
Our health care system is broken.
He looks like Igor.
And it's broken for some of the reasons that Mr. Kennedy indicated. We have not paid attention to the fact that we have massive amounts of chronic disease. We have not answered the question why in the richest country in the history of the world, our life expectancy is lower than it is in countries far poorer than we are. So I think in many ways, President Trump
Definition
and
of
Mr. Kennedy have asked some of the right questions. Problem is their answers will only make a bad situation worse.
The answer is more government.
So let me ask Mr. Kennedy again. If we want to make America healthy, will you assure the American people that you will fight to do what every other major country on earth does, guarantee health care to every single American?
I'm going to make America healthier than other countries in the world right now.
Will you guarantee do what every other major country does? That's a simple question.
And by the way, Bernie, the problem of corruption is not just in the federal agencies. It's in Congress, too. Almost all the members of this panel are accepting, including yourself, are accepting millions of dollars from the pharmaceutical industry.
I ran for president like you. I got millions and millions of contributions. They did not come from the executives, not one nickel of PAC money from the pharmaceutical industry. They came from workers.
In 2020, you were the single largest
because I had pharmaceutical money from workers all over this country. Workers,
you were the single
not a nickel from corporate.
You were the single largest acceptor of pharmaceutical dollars.
No, from workers in
1.5 million.
Yeah, out of 200 million. All right, but. You have not answered the last question.
This is actually something that I loved from the committee hearings is that some of these guys are like fighting back.
Yeah.
So often with these hearings or with these hearings, so often they kind of just like sit there and like they take the beating. They try to respond. And
thank you for the question, Senator.
Thank you for the question. But like that's been a thing. That's been a theme with a lot of the Trump picks is like they've been fighting back, which is unusual. Like I've watched a lot of these hearings in the past. You don't really see that often.
So the total employment in the manufacturing of pharmaceuticals in the United States is 1.3 million people.
So every single one gave
gave him money. Yeah, right, Bernie. Yeah, right. That's not how political donations work. That is the most ridiculous lie. We know that's false. To be clear.
I have had people push back on things I've shared on social media saying, oh, well, he gave the money back. And maybe he did. I don't know.
They're probably talking about PAC contributions, right?
So he returned PAC contributions he got to his campaign.
Many senators do that. I would guess without looking at it that it's likely what we're referring to is some PAC contributions returned. But what is true is that he accepted from, obviously from wealthy people in the pharmaceutical industry, substantial contributions, making him the largest.
But none of them were executives. Receiver. They were just I doubt that very much.
There's one more little stunt that Bernie pulled.
Yeah.
And this was my favorite thing from all of the hearings.
This is the most memeable.
This is so funny to me.
So over the top.
Here it is.
Selling what's called onesies. These are little things, clothing for babies.
Oh, thanks, Bernie.
One of them is titled Unfaxed, Unafraid.
He's explaining to liberals because they don't actually
Next
have
one, and they're sold for $26 a piece, by the way. Next one is no vax, wow. No okay. problem.
Thank you.
Now, you're coming before this committee, and you say you're pro-vaccine. Just want to ask some questions. And yet your organization is making money selling a child's product to parents for $26, which casts fundamental doubt on the usefulness of vaccines. Can you tell us now that you will, now that you are
RFK's face.
Pro-vaccine, that you're going to have your organization take these products off the market?
Senator, I have no power over that organization. I'm not part of it. I resigned from the board.
Yeah, that was just a few months ago. You founded
Megan
that.
In the back.
You certainly have power. You can make that call. Are you supportive of this?
I've had nothing to do with
Are you
leadership.
Supportive of these onesies?
I'm supportive of vaccines.
Are you supportive of these?
Megyn Kelly's dying in the background.
Anti-vaccine.
Okay, guys. I am supportive of vaccines.
New merch idea. See, RFK is even smiling. He's like, this is fucking ridiculous.
Are you supportive of these onesies?
We're so happy to announce a brand new HR merch item. I am supportive of this onesie, baby onesie, with RFK's face on it. Coming soon.
Oh, that'd be hilarious. HRpod.com. We should totally do that. That's so good.
HumanReactionPod.com.
Oh, my God. It was funny just watching Megyn Kelly's face in the back. Because, like, she's media. She's savvy with media. And she just, as soon as she starts hearing the onesies conversation, she's just, like, dying in the background.
Well, additionally to that, obviously, like, you're making money on this. It's like, I resigned from that board. It's like, do you support this? I mean, it just shows to show you. I mean, not only did they not do the research to not know that, so someone screwed up, obviously. A staff member did. You can just imagine the planning meeting. How are we going to get RFK? Well, we're going to print out some giant onesies and put them up behind you. And he's like, that's a great idea. You know?
I also like him explaining what a onesie is.
Yeah, right? Like people
clothing
don't know.
For babies.
So clothing for babies.
Also,
unavaxed, unafraid. Do you support this, sir?
Just ridiculous, man.
Oh, no. I'm looking for that. There it is. The meme. We got to share the meme. I'll put it in the notes. Okay. The shot of Bernie in the onesie. Have you guys seen it?
No.
Oh, no. Really?
Oh, it's so funny, dude.
There we go.
Do you support these onesies? Okay. I'll pull it right now.
Pull it, baby.
There we go. what do we have here?
Come on, internet.
Here we go.
I don't want to see that. I'm sorry Joe subjected everybody to that.
I had to see it. Everyone else has to see it. That's the right I get for having a podcast. Yeah,
well, I wish I was an audio only.
I was going to say, this is the benefit for our audio only.
Yeah, you don't have to put up with whatever Joe's putting
I'll describe it for you. A very pale old man in a unitard that looks like a onesie. He says, vaxxed and afraid.
Oh, man. It's all good, right. Good Photoshop work.
Yep.
Well done.
Yes.
All right. So there was some controversy, which is, did he sell out? Right. So this is probably the most interesting thing that happened out of the RFK inauguration, where he praised Operation Warp Speed.
Sure. And I'll just say about Operation Warp Speed, it was an extraordinary accomplishment, showed demonstration of leadership by President Trump.
So is he selling out for power? Right, he was known as, you know, a critic of the vax. Now, as he's trying to become a member of the Trump administration, he's now praising Operation Warp Speed. What does this mean?
I mean, the way I look at it is, like, there's two ways to analyze. I mean, one, he's saying yes, operationally it was a feat to roll out a medical product so quickly to the American people. He's saying that without saying the product that was rolled out was good and I support that product. So to me, it's not necessarily like he's selling out his stance on the efficacy of the COVID vaccine. More so just, you know, complimenting the leadership to get it done. That's how I view it.
There's also a thing, too, and this is a bit of an aside from the Operation Warp Speed, but there's a lot of, do you support vaccines? And him saying, I support vaccines. And I think people don't understand his position traditionally.
Right.
Like, people have this dichotomy in their head where it's like, either you're pro-vaccine or you're anti-vaccine, and there's no room for nuance in between that. It's right. not like, are all vaccines the same? Are right. some more dangerous than others? Are some useful? Are some not? Like, yep. there's actually a much broader discussion to be had there, too. Yeah. And people, for some reason in this fight, just lose all sense of nuance, and everything is just like, you're one or the other. It's sort of like immigration, where it's like, mm-hmm. either you're for infinite immigration or zero immigration. Right. There's right. no like room in between, right?
Well, and to explain some of the difference too, like the original format for vaccines was a live attenuated virus. So they would mm-hmm. take the virus that was killing people or making them sick and weaken it and inject that into someone so that their immune system could fight it off more easily than the full strength virus, right? That was the original format. Mm-hmm. And it worked really well, but the problem was it had variability because some people had stronger immune systems or weaker immune systems. There was a potential that it could actually, you know, take hold and maybe spread, so it could actually contribute to, you know, viral outbreaks and stuff. So they switched to this adjuvant model, right, where they're using like mercury or aluminum in the vaccine to stimulate the immune response to just a fragment of the vaccine, a dead piece of the proteins that the body can recognize and say, I'm going to attack that thing because we have this huge bolus of aluminum or mercury that's activating the immune system, and we're going to attack the thing that came in with it, which is the viral protein, right? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, now we have the mRNA model, which is even an evolution on that. But, you know, RFK, I would say, is supportive of the traditional model of vaccination, right? Because that is actually, I think, the real like heroic medical technology that has been invented in this space. The evolutions of it, which have tried to make it safer, have actually made it more damaging because aluminum's neurotoxic, mercury is neurotoxic. These are heavy metals that the body has trouble getting rid of. And that those are the things that are being blamed for, you know, the rise in autism and the other like autoimmune problems that people are having as a result of taking these more modern vaccines. Hmm.
There's also an argument where you can be for Operation Warp Speed and against the COVID vaccine, because a lot of what Operation Warp Speed was Trump clearing out all the bureaucratic nonsense that was being able to get medical stuff pushed forward. So like you can have like, it's not like those are contradicting necessarily. It's just what it was used for was the COVID vaccine, right? Like he used it under this situation to be able to kind of get that through, but mm-hmm. So like to me it's not even necessarily that contradictory.
Totally.
So it's sense. It's a classic example of the what's been long been the criticism of the FDA is that in FDA process, unlike Europe, you have to prove both safety and efficacy, and they basically shortcut the efficacy part of that, making it more like the European model. Now the trick there is, was it safe in the first place, right? And did we rush through that and make yes. an unsound decision in that.
Yes, the answer is yes.
Or was it more like a typical vaccine where it works for the medium, but it doesn't work for everybody else necessarily, and at some bandwidth, it's actually dangerous? Those are another discussion separate from that. And then lastly, was it effective, right? And typically, that's understood like hydroxychloroquine and other things like that that are safe, that also have a longstanding consensus that it's also effective, right?
Long-term safety data.
We arrive at that both by long-term safety data and by the effectiveness question.
Of
fighting viral infections.
Well, it's also worth remembering that the Democrats were on the other side of this during the Trump administration.
2 seconds before.
Like, yeah. Because it was like, I very much remember in the debates Kamala Harris, when she was running for president in 2020, being like, I'm not taking a Trump vaccine,
right?
Yeah. And being super hardcore against Operation Warp Speed and all this stuff, right? And it's just,
yeah, because Trump made it himself.
Yeah. Trump made the vaccine. He was in the lab.
He's in the lab.
Yeah.
He's like, it's not going to be from China.
We'll make it here, American workers.
He's a talented guy, you know, very psychologist, yeah. Vaccine manufacturer.
Well, psychologist.
So, and I wanted to know too,
whale therapist.
Absolutely.
The progressives and how they're handling this. Because just keep in mind what's happening right now. This moment is so interesting. We have a former Democrat appointing former Democrats to his administration, and progressives hate it. They're so mad. So, and the way they're framing this, I think, is really interesting.
And to be clear, you're talking about Trump nominating RFK.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
I don't know that Trump. A lot of people like have the back history to know that Trump was at one point a Democrat.
Yeah.
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 It's also just like two of the three people that we're going to be talking about today, former Democrats. Like,
yeah.
Tulsi, who we're going to be going to next, is the same type of deal.
Yeah.
Do you agree with me that the United States should join every other major country on earth and guarantee health care to all people as a human right? Yes, no.
Senator, I can't give you a yes or no answer to that question.
Healthcare a human right? Is healthcare a human right?
In the way that free speech is a human right,
yeah.
I would say it's different because with free speech doesn't cost anybody anything, but in healthcare, if you smoke cigarettes for 20 years and you get cancer, you are now taking from the pool. Well, and so are you guaranteed the same right, or is there also a duty?
I'm sorry. I'd love to talk for an hour with you. We got a few minutes left here.
Shit, that's a very good argument.
Every other country on earth says healthcare, whether you're poor or rich, young or old, to human right. I'm not hearing you say that.
Now, obviously, this line of questioning is relevant considering the fact that Donald Trump has nominated RFK Jr. to be the top health official in the federal government. And it's clear that RFK Jr. is not in favor of Bernie Sanders' signature legislation, Medicare for All or universal health care. And so I got to be honest, I'm really not surprised by that. Most people who aren't, you know, on the progressive left tend to recoil as soon as they hear something like Medicare for All. Until you take that labeling away and just kind of describe what the legislation would do, then all of a sudden polling indicates the majority of Americans are in favor of it.
Yeah. So let me dive into the numbers real quick. What polling suggests, and then we're going to back into whether or not the Secretary of Health can implement Medicaid for All, which is an absurd question. But her address there is really interesting because they want to talk about the upside of that. And that's when I say to you, hey, what if healthcare was free and you wouldn't have to pay any premiums? 70% of people say, yeah, that's awesome. But if you say, what if you have to pay for it?
With your tax dollars.
With your tax dollars. If it means increased taxes, it drops to 40%. And then if we say, what if it has the collateral consequences that RFK is pointing at, which is people will abuse that system because they will not take care of themselves, they'll be less healthy, and then they'll gunk up the system with more requests because they don't pay an immediate cost, especially if you have a more progressive tax policy, that will then mean you have to... What's that? What arbitrage was saying before when we were talking about this? Arbitrage on time. It drops to 37%. So as soon as you actually give American people the actual decision, which is should we have the benefits and the costs of a Medicare for All plan, now it's 37%. Only the radical left. Only really that 40% of very far leftists would prefer that.
Well, and that's exactly is she's saying, you know, the average American doesn't like the label Medicare for All. But what if you just told them that we lived in a fantasy world where there was no cost to healthcare at all? What if we told them that?
Yeah.
Then I think they would support it.
Right.
But polling suggests if we lived in fantasy land, they would support it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And exactly. And where RFK is coming from is an incentive based look at it, right? It's like you're basically just removing the incentive to live a healthy life in any way, which is what he's trying to encourage people to do. Well, I mean, I don't know. There's probably some healthy people in San Francisco.
There's a lot of unhealthy.
I mean, Mississippi, maybe. I don't know, right?
I'm talking about more the people who are, you know, just in the open drug scene.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Who would be the people abusing that?
For sure. And the same removal of incentives exists there.
Well, importantly, pay no taxes. Right. They don't pay for the cost of the thing that they're getting the benefit from.
Right.
So and the last part of that, and this happened a bunch of times, and it was actually suggested in the earlier video, is that they kept on trying to get him to say that he supports universal health care when that's not his job he's applying for. That's not the thing you're confirming.
Right.
The Secretary of Health cannot implement Medicaid for All, Bernie. So what are we talking about right now, other than wanting to talk about your pet issue, which has nothing to do with what's going on right now?
Talk about the onesies.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you support these onesies?
Onesies for all children.
So Congress has to pass that. Congress can't pass it because it only has a 37% support rate once people know the full story. So why are you talking about it right now for?
Right. Well, I mean, he's just trying to you know, stick him on something. He can say, you won't do it.
Yeah, exactly. So next up, we got Tulsi Gabbard, who came in for DNI. Tulsi, if you don't know, is a former U.S. Congresswoman, Iraq war veteran, political commentator, gained national attention for anti-interventionist policy. Interventionist may be right, but just criticizing both the Obama administration and the Trump administration, you know, for, and but more importantly, what really got her on the outs, Hillary and Obama, for their Middle East policy. And then later left the Democratic Party. She's now independent and then became, as of this year, a Republican.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what I got queued up here for us is an old clip from 6 years ago. And this clip is going to help give context to the saga that has been Tulsi Gabbard over many years now. After she kind of turned her back on the Democratic Party, she was still a Democrat, but she was criticizing them. Uh-huh. There became this major narrative that came in: Russia puppet from Hillary Clinton, Assad toady from kind of the establishment at one point. And here is a clip from Barry Weiss when she was still working at New York Times, just kind of parroting the talking points on Joe Rogan's podcast. Bearing in mind, Joe Rogan had already endorsed Tulsi at the time. He was a friend of Tulsi. Tulsi had been on the show many times. So, like, it's kind of a weird place to do this at. But one of the most cringe moments in internet history, and I love this clip.
We have Kamala, Kirsten Tulsi Gillibrand. Gabbard. Oh, monstrous.
Monstrous?
Ideas.
Well, when she was 22, she had...
No, she's an Assad toady.
What does that mean?
She is
What's a toady?
I think that I used that word correctly. Jamie, can you check what toady means?
Like toeing the line? Is that what it means?
No, I think it's like a...
I love this clip.
T-O-A-D-I-E.
Thank you, Bennett. Me too. I can't watch The Office for
I think
that
it
reason.
Means what I think it means.
It's even worse when you imagine that she just failed upward after this.
Toady. Definition of toadies. A person
a
who flatters or defers to others
kinda
for self-serving
right.
reasons.
A sycophant.
So she's an Assad sycophant. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's
proven.
Almost said it.
Known. No. About her.
Known.
Like, what did she say that
we have to look.
Her?
I don't remember the details.
You probably should say that before we
you probably should know.
Say that about her. We should probably read it rather.
Well, I have read it.
No, I mean, we should read it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Just so we know what she said.
Look up Tulsi Gabbard. Look up
I really enjoyed talking to her. I like her a lot.
It goes on for another 2 minutes. And Joe just kind of like shaming her.
Yeah,
like he goes into just being like, I mean, you're using this word and you didn't even know what the word meant.
It's bad.
It's one of the cringiest moments in like internet podcast history.
So one of the biggest owns when it comes to the overall landscape of this was in the Tulsi confirmation hearing when she was pressured to respond to this accusation that she is getting her intelligence from Russia or Syria or Iran, not getting her intelligence from the CIA, because the CIA would never lie to get us into a war, ever. It would never happen.
Can always trust them.
So should take that blindly and just consider that. And what is her true motivation here? And when she responded, it was fantastic. So, and it really shows her approach in thinking about these issues.
Senator, as someone who enlisted in the military specifically because of Al-Qaeda's terrorist attack on 9/11 and committing myself and my life to doing what I could to defeat these terrorists, it was shocking and a betrayal to me and every person who was killed on 9/11, their families and my brothers and sisters in uniform. When as a member of Congress, I learned about President Obama's dual programs that he had begun really to overthrow the regime of Syria, and being willing to, through the CIA's Timber Sycamore program that has now been made public, of working with and arming and equipping Al-Qaeda in an effort to overthrow that regime, starting yet another regime change war in the Middle East. DOD train and equip program, again, begun under President Obama, is widely been known, looked at and studied, that ultimately resulted in over $500 million being used to train who they called moderate rebels, but were actually fighters working with and aligned with Al-Qaeda's affiliate on the ground in Syria. all to move forward with their regime change and not acknowledging what was obvious at the time and what has unfortunately borne true, which was that a regime change war in Syria, much like the regime change wars in Iraq, the toppling of Gaddafi and Mubarak, while these are all dictators, would likely result in the rise of Islamist extremists like al-Qaeda taking power. I shed no tears for the fall of the Assad regime, but today we have an Islamist extremist who is now in charge of Syria, as I said, who danced on the streets to celebrate the 9/11 attack, who ruled over Idlib with an Islamist extremist governance, and who has already begun to persecute and kill and arrest religious minorities like Christians in Syria.
I understand.
Why that should be acceptable to anyone is beyond me.
It shouldn't
be. Certainly
and
not
I understand,
in our
but I appreciate Kelly. I appreciate your answer and thank you. My concern has to do with the tendency to repeat Russian and Syrian, and even in some cases, I think we'll get into in the closed session, Iranian information, and to discount what comes from our intelligence community.
Senator, every American deserves to know that people in our own government were providing support to our sworn enemy, al-Qaeda. That should not be acceptable by anyone.
Thank you.
Oof. Good answer.
Really good answer.
It's also just the throwback of, I'm just very disappointed that you were sharing Russian talking points, Syrian talking points, Iranian, because that's just what they throw every single time. There's like,
you need to do our propaganda. Right. And that like leaves aside the question of what the hell's the strategy? It leaves aside the question is what the hell should we do? It's only the question of are you reinforcing our system, our strategy, regardless of the truth and whether or not that system and strategy is a good idea.
Right.
Well, this is also that final line there of the American people should know that people within our own government have been supporting our sworn enemies. And that's true. Like, we can see the images of, like, Senator John McCain over there talking with al-Qaeda members and things like that. Like, we know that stuff that's happening and that this is part of the strategy.
Well,
and the American public is just kind of, like, unaware of that for the most part.
Well, because we're so much focused on the support of the system rather than the question of what is the grand strategy. So what she's articulating here is that there was a point after the Iraq war when we realized we screwed up. We're like, oh, no, this is going to give the Shiites lots of power. So now we're going to switch over to the Sunni side. And guess who else is Sunni and has lots of warfighting experience? ISIS and al-Qaeda and people like that. So then we were like, well, we got these other countries. We have the seven countries in 5 years. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So any of our listeners will remember that this strategy, this pivot away in order to, you know, on behalf of helping secure the realm of Israel, was to eliminate these countries. And at that juncture, we started to support these guys through mostly covert ops. Now, what happened with those guys? Well, a lot of these dudes were, you know, fighters against us in Iraq. And then we were like, hey, guys, we can find our common ground.
They grew up a little.
Here's some weapons. they were head-chopping maniacs. But, you know, they got to their 30s and they're like, why do I do that? Why don't I just take over governments and do it that way? And that's what happened this week. Jolani declared himself the president of Syria after canceling the elections and the constitution of Syria. In a victory speech given Wednesday night, Jolani declared himself president of Syria, claiming that this would be for an unspecified transitional period.
And Jolani is the guy that we talked about on this podcast.
Yeah.
That was like, we grew up, he got invited onto CNN and interviewed. Mm-hmm. And just like, you know, I was a crazy head chopper, but I'm, you know, I...
Once
I,
again, we can really see it demonstrated. Spread democracy.
Look at that picture
the
down
world.
There. Yeah. Old Jolani. New Jolani.
Look, he's in a suit now.
Oh my god, new meme format just dropped. Sam, have at it.
Yeah, like, this is the thing where it's like, where you, when you're paying attention to foreign policy and just like the bare bones basics of it, you feel like a crazy person, because it's just like, and then you try to like tell people that this is how this stuff works, and everybody's just like, no, it's like they're all just crazy, you know, blah 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 blah. You're just like,
hate us because of freedom.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So
this was the head chopper. Like, that's the crazy thing.
Yeah.
Now it's just state-sponsored head chopping.
Yeah.
Right, which well, is
he was ideological in his 20s, like so many young people in their 20s are.
Well, and it's important to understand.
Just Syria, so youthful, exuberant.
So there are religious minorities in all these countries, Iran and Iraq and these areas. Syria is uniquely diverse in that there's been a longstanding set of, you know, different groups in Syria that have, you know, not perfectly gotten along, but gotten along better than a lot of the places that would have similar demographic challenges. And having an Islamist in charge of that is incredibly dangerous. And anyone who is interested in the peace of the area would quickly see, hey, there's this trend that we do when we knock over governments of, you know, secular-ish dictators, that we get these Islamic extremists that come in afterwards. That is a real danger. And her citing that should put alarm bells into the American ear, because we've experienced this so many times so far.
That's always been my understanding of Syria, is that minority groups in Syria were actually quite like had a high approval ratings of Assad himself. Like the Christian minority groups that were always like, Assad's going to kill the Christian minorities. Like that was always a talking point that was had. Is like, my understanding is that they were very happy there.
We're
in comparison to anywhere else in the region. Yeah. Like it was like very high. And then it becomes this thing where it's just like, now you have this very radical Islamist group is like, those Christian minorities are actually probably not going to be doing so well in the new regime.
It's a real fear. And there is some evidence that she cites that you can look up that does look like some early negative signs of that. Yeah. Mm. Before we go any further, Joe, I got a very serious question for you. Mm-hmm. Is Tulsi's fit for the camera? What do you think, buddy?
Well, you know what?
Connoisseur of women's fashion over here for
newer. It actually depends on what broadcast you're watching. I'm realizing looking at the is this Fox? Mm-hmm. Looking at the Fox broadcast, she's well exposed. However, if you watch it on PBS like I did for the live stream, way overexposed. The white just did not do well on the camera for PBS. I don't know. Maybe they're struggling with funding and they need some new equipment. I'm not sure.
Fox is going to make the Trump pick look better.
That could be good.
Trump defunded PBS and gave him a camcorder from the 1990s.
They're doing the classic CNN Joe Rogan look.
Exactly. No, great fit. I mean, I think she looks awesome. Very professional, elegant, you know, but also powerful. And I like how the white complements that streak in her hair.
There you go.
Sort of a Cruella de Vil vibe, which I think projects power.
No, I was thinking Rogue from X-Men.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. There you go.
That would be fitting.
Got
Rogue vibes. Yeah, no, so I dig it.
One thing that I want to frame here, especially when it comes to like the source of intelligence and questioning the narrative of the blob, is the degree to which why this is so important. And I think this question that we're coming up next, if we want to play it, Kyle, is kind of demonstrate some of that. That's a really quick clip, and we can dig into it.
This committee believes, as the vast majority of members of our intelligence agencies believe, that Edward Snowden was a traitor to the United States of America.
Senator, have confirmed
this
as Director
when the
of National
hits the
Intelligence,
road. This is,
I will
this
work
is not,
with you to make sure that there is not another Snowden
for social
like
media.
Leak.
It's not a moment to propagate theories, conspiracy theories, or attacks on journalism in the United States. This is when you need to answer the questions of the people whose votes you're asking for.
She's trying
to be confirmed as the chief intelligence officer of this nation. As my colleague said, this is not about you. It's about the people that serve the intelligence agencies of the United States.
It's important that he says it's not about you. It's about
is Edward Snowden a traitor to the United States of America? That is not a hard question to answer when the stakes are this high.
Senator, as someone who has
your answer is yes or no, is Edward Snowden a traitor to the United States of America?
As someone who has worn combat, I understand how critical our national security is.
Apparently, you don't. Apparently, you don't. Let me ask you.
So
every single time she opens her mouth, it just goes into the new thing. Oh God!
I am gonna put $20 down to primary that guy out. I got 20 on it, listeners. Drop it in the comments. How much are you contributing to his primary challenger? All right.
God. Oh man,
low T Bennett.
Leave it to Colorado to Anyway,
so I love Colorado. The Edward Snowden thing is a major part of this theme, which is she has said that Edward Snowden did a service to the American public by releasing the information that he did. Then they would say Section 702 is really important, right? We need all the powers to spy on American citizens. And she would say it's important for foreign, you know, surveillance, but we should have protections and balance civil liberties of Americans with this power.
Yeah.
And they were like, but you don't see, but you, you, Snowden, you don't understand. He's a traitor to America. It's about getting the right meme, like the right, like overall lesson about Snowden, trying to manipulate that. Well, the American public, I don't think, is following Congress on this at all. She's on the side of the American public in this.
Oh, for sure. Is there any polling on how the American public generally feels about Edward Snowden? Because I think that would be interesting to know. I mean, obviously, these senators couldn't give two shits about what the American public wants if it's not an election year. But I mean,
I also wonder what the American public actually knows about what Snowden did.
At this point, yeah, it's probably faded a lot in most people's memories. Unless they watch our show, in which case they would. So that's why you should share it with a friend.
That's right.
And help the show get bigger.
One thing that I really liked about the way Tulsi answered the Snowden question is she said, we should have proper channels and protections for whistleblowers to go through the right channels to release information that they feel is, you know, illegal or damaging to the American public, so that it's not just this, you know, Snowden-esque leak straight to the press, right? Like, we need to be protecting those institutions. And so far, I mean, obviously, I don't think we have great channels for that to occur. I mean, they're oftentimes stonewalled at a lot of those turns.
Yeah, I think the direction is that there has been whistleblower protections that have been implemented that are stronger now than they were back in 2013. One of her cases is saying, if we don't lie to the American people, we won't need to whistleblow so much. You know,
right?
at least part of that is, and as you look at the question of public support, it's about 40% have no opinion. So that basically means, statistically speaking, nobody knows about it. That means, and it's about half and half on either side, 30% say he's a hero, 40% say he's you know, traitor. Sorry, 30-30 on either side,
yeah.
40% in the middle. So that question of, you know, where's the American people at, to me is, and then it gets worse as time goes on, right? Less people, more people don't know anything about it, and smaller groups of people on either side have strong opinions.
That's why you need to share this show with your Gen Z friends so they know who Edward Snowden is.
Yeah, he's just fallen out of the public view, really. Like, he's big on Twitter, and he hangs out with, like, the crypto people a lot. But other than that, I feel like most people have kind of just forgotten.
Well, and it's interesting, and I commend Tulsi for this. Like, he posted on Twitter, like, I expect and want Tulsi to disavow me. Say I'm a traitor. Yeah. Do what you have to do to tell these people that you're the right candidate for this job so you get the job. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, throw me under the bus. I appreciated that.
Unfortunately, that's a trap for Tulsi at that point, though.
For sure.
Because then they say, well, you're just doing this for the power.
Right.
You know, right. Even though all these guys are there for
but
power.
But the sentiment from
that's
Snowden
also
was,
what her aunt said.
Right. Oh, yeah. I think the sentiment is absolutely right and noble.
Yeah.
Okay, so I really want to dive into this because people are misunderstanding what the DNI is and why it's so important.
Director
for these
of National
people.
Intelligence.
Yeah. With that, and I think the best way to understand this is if you understand JFK, you can understand why this is so important. So the DNI was implemented after 9/11 in order to bring together all intelligence into one place so that you could have better, more integrated decision-making on the intelligence level. That way the FBI and the CIA can't, like, silo. During the JFK, you know, kind of the lead up to the JFK assassination, the reason why JFK goes from a cold warrior to somebody who's working directly with Russia and Cuba to somebody who's actively trying to pull troops out of Vietnam and undermining kind of like the state, the military apparatus in their strategy to, you know, do the containment strategy and to push and do all these proxy wars all over the place, was because he discovered after the Bay of Pigs that there was an intelligence manipulation to him, that the intelligence agencies were giving him not untrue, but highly speculative stuff as if it was true. And then using that to manipulate his worldview. And then so he would see the world in a manipulated frame and then take actions that they supported rather than giving him facts so that he could make decisions and instruct them what to do. I've been reading a couple books and lead up to the disclosures that might happen to better inform us of, you know, so we can navigate that. And one of the things that's really interesting to me is how much effort he had to go through to go around his own military apparatus, intelligence apparatuses, in order to do diplomacy, in order to make decisions, in order to do this. So one of the reasons why they're trying to box Tulsi in this way is because if you can frame all of the stuff that isn't the blob message as Russian disinformation or Iranian or Syrian or whatever, that way you can try to control, you're kind of violating the cultural norms about that empower unnamed bureaucrats to really define the direction, the strategic direction, rather than the opposite of what the vision of the Constitution is, which is the president gets to make foreign policy decisions about our military and the things that our military and intelligence communities are supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
So it really demonstrates that whole thing. I mean, like it's that culture is the problem. And that's why Trump is as popular as he is, because he's a threat to that culture. That's why it's a grassroots movement that has pulled in a lot of people from the left and the right who are concerned about these issues.
For sure. So yeah, right. How is it looking for Tulsi up there? It seems contentious at best. Does she have a shot?
After listening to the hearing, I'm like, I don't know if she gets out of committee. I mean, so Tom Cotton is the chair the guy's the hawkest of the hawk. But because he wants to work with the Trump administration, I assume he is coming along with this. I really found James Langford from Oklahoma said he's a yes. And John Cornyn actually surprisingly said he's a yes. So
really,
that outside pressure might be enough. The administrative pressure might be enough. I figured Cornyn, for example, and Cotton would be far more bigger barriers. Yeah. But there are probably deals going on behind the scenes. It maybe gets to the floor, but even on the floor, it's going to be challenging. And it's a real shame to watch these Democrats just lose all their principles. All the skepticism of the IC over the years, all the skepticisms of the war on terror and all the things that they did all the way through the Bush years, and just give it up and just defend institutions for its own sake, just in order to try to own Trump. Now, it's a hell of a shame.
Yeah. So once she gets to the floor, I mean, are there other, is it mostly Republicans that you'd be concerned are not going to support her for this?
I don't know which Democrats are going to support her. I just can't see it. Yeah. Because there's no political incentive for them to do so. So the best rule of politics, right, is not to get the right people in to make the right decisions. It's to make it profitable for the wrong people to make the right decisions. Does that make sense? Because it's really hard to keep the right people in. You get the right people in, they change, right? So you want the incentives aligned, and I'm not sure if the incentives are strong enough in this, because in the blob, this is such a huge part of it. And it's hard to describe to people from outside of it. I was in D.C. in 2013 when the Snowden files leaked. And when that happened, the amount of like everybody going and like the way the tone of every room changed and the way everything just like flipped on a dime. It's so animal. It's so like it's really deep down into your animal brain about the way the hierarchy works and who you defer to. Everything changes. So the degree to which they're fighting that is a real, I mean, it's a huge barrier.
Yeah. The white blood cells have to attack, right?
Yeah.
They can't let this virus that is Tulsi Gabbard infect their little cultural bubble.
Mm-hmm. The Assad toady.
So messed
the Assad
up.
Toady. It's the outside influence of Putin and Assad and Iran and everybody else, all the other bad people, they're coming in through this vessel that is Tulsi Gabbard.
So if Trump said, as we mentioned, you know, if any of these appointments don't go through, he's going to go scorched earth. What does that look like?
It probably looks like punishing individuals on their priorities that they want to get in the omnibus.
Mm. Right? So not allowing them to get their pet projects into the budget.
Yeah. And then it might be like, you know, MAGA aligned outside groups putting pressure in and primarying and things like that.
It's also probably sending the making it well known that these are traitors to the movement, mm-hmm. too,
right,
which will have its long term lasting effects, because then they have to deal with the outside pressure that is the MAGA movement at large.
Right.
Sort of like when everybody came together and old what's his name and came Trump had to come out and say that he wasn't. What is his name?
I don't know who you're talking about.
there was speculation of, I'm spacing on his name. There was speculation on the one intelligence official was going to be brought in, and basically the entire internet swarmed and
Pompeo.
That's
name.
Yes.
Right.
I kept wanting to say Brennan. I was like, that's not the guy.
Yeah.
The entire internet like swarmed on that, and mm-hmm. then it made it so it was just so unfeasible that he couldn't be selected, mm-hmm. and then he just got pushed out. Trump was probably already going to push him out, but that pressure is very important, and that's going to happen to these senators. I think is like Trump will just send some tweets, and the influence mechanism is
Yeah.
Depending on the memory, and the internet does have a short memory, and the passion will kind of fade even if this fails. That degree, and then, you know, that who gets to talk to Trump about what's happening in the world is a really, really important question. Yeah. So, but a lot of that happens behind the scenes, and people don't see that. So it's going to be a very interesting, like, is Trump going to use this as a movement builder if it fails to change the outcome of the Senate going forward? I don't know. I mean, like, is it possible? That's a long time in internet time, yeah. in political
that,
time.
That is also the neocon strategy, is because the president and, you know, Trump himself, he can't have his finger on the pulse of everything. So he has to be, he's being fed information from trusted people. So, like, a lot of the neocon strategy is just trying to get their types of people into those places where they can be the information providers to Trump.
Yeah.
And that's going to affect policy.
Yeah. Two final questions before we move on to Kash Patel, which was a very spicy hearing, which I think will be fun to talk about. One, there was the mention at the end of 2024 about recess appointments. Has that window passed, or is that still something that Trump could do to force some of these appointments to go through?
The majority leader can call a recess and then they can appoint. So if that depends on whether John Thune is along with that.
Gotcha. Yeah. And so secondly, if Tulsi does not get confirmed, what is the expectation of who would come in to take that role?
Oh, I have no idea.
Mike, I mean, could be.
Hopefully not someone like that. Oh, yeah. It could just be more of a, you know, intelligence officer, kind of Kash Patel type person, right? That's kind of been working in intelligence directly. That they trust. But, you know, the question is, can you trust them? They're spies. They lie. That's the thing that spies do, is they lie. You know,
yeah.
We legalize that for some reason.
Yeah.
like, who would it be? Like, because Ratcliffe got CIA. What did Ratcliffe get?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't, like, there's nobody that comes to mind that could take the spot that would be somebody that we trust, you know?
Yeah. It might be Walsh or someone like that.
Yeah.
Well, moving on to Kash. David, you want to frame him up?
Yeah, former government official, national security expert who served under key roles in the Trump administration, including chief of staff to the acting Secretary of Defense, and is known as working intelligence and counterterrorism issues, specifically on exposing the Russia collusion hoax.
Yeah, he was like the key guy on that. Mm-hmm. Also just kind of like a fun guy.
I mean, I really liked his banter with the committee. Yeah. I thought he was not a pushover in any way, and really had some fun sound bites.
Yeah, so here's a clip that you queued up that says, how sad Congress is. So we will start off with that.
In this we are agreement, Senator. Get my grand jury testimony. I want it made public. I asked the Department of Justice to make it public, and they refused to do so.
There is no legal bound against you telling us right now what you testified to.
When I asked for my transcript to be released,
sir, did you or did you not commit a crime?
Senator, I did not commit a crime.
Then why won't you tell us what you testified to?
Because it occurred over the course of 3 weeks. I don't have the ability to recall everything I testified to, but I'm asking you to put my transcript down.
Did you testify to witnessing the President of the United States declassifying documents?
Senator, what I testified to is best captured by that transcript in real time.
So you're not willing to tell Congress, after making many pledges today about transparency, whether or not you testified to witnessing the President of the United States declassify documents. In the name of all the values you have said today, did you or did you not testify to witnessing the President of the United States declassify documents?
I testified accordingly and under oath, and I encourage you to get that transcript.
And by the law...
You get the point of that clip.
Yeah, so mute it real quick while we talk over it. And there's a point here I wanted to note that's interesting. Mm-hmm. As he's talking, he's kind of sticking on the same issue. Actually, go back to the last clip of Corey before this.
The last...
And you'll see a staffer come in and hand a piece of paper behind
him. Yeah,
that
was at the very beginning. Go back to the beginning.
Was that the transcript?
Yeah, watch this.
Yeah. Oh, Do you see it? I see.
Yeah.
I missed it. Do it again.
It's playing.
Oh. See the staffer? Puts it in. He looks at it, brings it over, and then he interrupts him with, did you commit a crime?
So the staffer said, call it a crime.
Yeah, right.
Like, we need this soundbite. Call it a crime.
Yeah, right. And that's and, the, and so why did
Wait,
why
but
did,
Low T Bennett said this is not about social media. So is Congress lying?
Well, it's not about social media. It's about fundraising emails. So right. After this, Cory Booker's staff clips this out, and then they say we stuck it to him, Cash Patel, who is, you know, is a they want to make him like a J6 like person or something like that. On, you know, securing documents, and this is how irresponsible the Trump administration
is. You know, that's
is.
Actually, like, kudos to Corey. Like, that's actually pretty smooth. Like, if you're just an audio-only listener, he made that smooth transition into reading the note and talking about it mm-hmm. very quickly. Like, good job, Corey. Like, he does well.
But that's the skill of a congressman. And then, so part of this is...
That's the skill of a congressman.
Right? That's just what
you
develop.
Take what's handed to you and read it right there.
That's what we vote for.
That's why you have staff, right? That's why staff exists, because you can't be on top of everything. So what you do is you rely on your staff to give you the talking points, right?
Because like, that's a lot of trust in your staff right there. Like, what if they just put like a little joke in there and it's just like...
Like straight out of Anchorman?
That's right. So interesting moment, especially when it comes to the classified documents, because the president itself is the person who decides what is and isn't classified. But leaving that aside, we have this interesting process discussion that happened. And of course, Senator Kennedy is one of America's treasures. And we just have to show it, because this is an interesting. What happens in these committees is that there's a certain set of rules. And then when they go over, they have to have this battle over how to implement the rules with the chair. And so in this situation, it kind of demonstrates how absurd these things are. And unfortunately, and Cash is kind of in, I think. He's 50-50. Vance will appoint him. It's going to be Hegseth all over again. But this moment kind of demonstrates the absurdity of it, the whole thing.
If you're not ticking off some people, you're not doing your job right.
Hell yeah.
My colleague and friend Senator Durbin called you a conspiracy theorist. You remember that?
I do, Senator.
You were instrumental in revealing that the Trump-Russia election collusion hoax was a hoax, weren't you?
Yes, sir. I was a lead investigator.
Sounds to me like we need to get some new conspiracy theories, because all the old ones turned out to be true.
Facts matter,
Senator. Yeah. I mean, conspiracy theorists are up something like 37 to nothing.
It's not the first time he said that. We've played a clip of him basically saying that same thing before.
Mm-hmm. It's a good clip. We can play it as many times.
It is a funny thing, because like, I don't know. I have literally zero conception about how he votes.
Oh, for sure.
Like,
I
have no idea his voting record or anything, but he's like my favorite senator.
He's just so funny and authentic.
He's just a
so
good old boy.
Like
you know?
I would go to war for this man. Yeah. And I don't know what he votes for at all, ever.
I would get a beer with him for sure. Like, for he seems sure. like a kind of guy you'd want to hang with.
Absolutely. Are we going to play the clip where they fight over the timing, the rules?
I forgot what that one. I thought that was the one we were queuing up, but apparently not.
Let's do it.
That is the next one. I'm going to put this on a little bit of a higher speed, because
no, you can't. It's all about the timing.
Just a slight little speed, because it's a longer clip, but it shows. I think that this clip does show the absurdity of the whole process and how much of a waste of a time this all is. But it's also kind of funny.
It's super funny.
They're having a good time, and it's kind of fun. Like, there's a lot of theater. It's like theater kids playing. They're playing.
Just
here.
Ugly.
It's fun.
Just like not as attractive people.
Yeah. Well, those ones are in Hollywood. They're at the Diddy parties.
Yeah. Right.
There's a few on the Republican side.
Did you say that the FBI Come headquarters me, should be shut down and reopened as a museum of the deep state?
Mr. Chairman, are we allowed to go an extra time?
Let's see. You get a second round. Before I call on Senator Lee.
Could he just answer the question if he said that the FBI headquarters, where they investigate cybercrime and terrorism, should be shut down and open as a deep state?
Hey, Mr. Chair.
As a museum. Did he say that the headquarters should be shut down?
Mr. Chair.
I deserve an answer to that question.
She wants to talk to the manager.
Asking to be head of the FBI.
She super does.
And he said that their headquarters should be shut down.
Mr. Chair, parliamentary inquiry.
You got anything you want to say, Mr. Patel, before I go on to Senator Lee?
Simply this. If the best attacks on me are going to be false accusations and grotesque mischaracterizations, the only thing this body is doing is defeating the credibility of the men and women at the FBI. I stood with them here in this country. In every theater of war we have, I was on the ground in service of this nation. And any accusations leveled against me that I would somehow put political bias before the Constitution are grotesquely unfair. And I will have you reminded that I have been endorsed by over 300,000 law enforcement officers to become the next director of the FBI. Let's ask them.
Mr. Chairman, I am quoting his own words from September of 2024. It is his own words. It is not some conspiracy.
It is
what Mr. Patel actually said himself. Facts matter.
You forget that you had 3 minutes in the next round to say what you just said.
Okay, I'll say him again.
Okay. Before I call Lee.
Mr. Chair, just parliamentary inquiry, and it was on time. It wasn't disputing any of the debate, but I intend to keep to my 7 minutes, and I appreciate you keeping everyone to it. If we go over, can we have that decrement against the time in the second round?
Kennedy queue it up right here.
If a member goes over, that was actually 10 minutes, Mr. Chair.
I'm not sure that I want to. Sometimes it's faster to get things done here, just letting people shout than it does to shut them up.
Mr. Chairman, you're a wise man, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Before we go to Lee.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, what do you want?
Yes, what do you want?
I love this guy. Mr. Chairman, I'm unlike Senator Tillis. I mean, if we're going to start this, I want an extra 3 minutes. Well, now, my friend Senator Klobuchar went 3 minutes over.
So, here, what you're saying is the chairman wasn't a very good chairman by not shutting her up. But I've gone through this before. And I think I know how to handle it.
I think you're a star-spangled awesome, Jim. But if you're going to let somebody over there go 3 minutes over, I want my extra 3 minutes.
Well, let's see. Let's see if it's abused by anybody else before we make that decision.
I'm just telling you, I'm going to abuse it.
I'm just telling you, I'm going to abuse it. I think you're star-spangled awesome.
We need that on the soundboard for sure.
That's a good idea for the soundboard. It's just Kennedy clips.
I'm going to have to create a whole page for him.
I think you're star-spangled awesome, Senator.
We need some new conspiracy theories.
So what I mean, Kash Patel was on the Sean Ryan show and said that he thinks the new headquarters be turned into a museum for the FBI. What he's talking about is the typical, and this is actually a vague criticism of what he wanted to gut the FBI, was this idea that so much of it is based in D.C., you should put it out into the rest of the country. They should be, agents should be more remote and more on the ground and using less analysts and things like that.
Yeah, didn't he say, like, let them go be cops, basically?
Yeah.
Was that Cash or was that Vivek?
That was Cash.
But it's hitting the same frame, right?
Because the Vivek take was kind of just like there's so much redundancy that's going on, and so many of these people could just go to that agency or that agency or that agency instead of being like doubling up on efforts.
And should be out doing investigations on the ground. And we need to. It's more about redeploying resources than anything else, right? Deploying resources more to on the ground investigations and actual cop work rather than doubling up on the bureaucracy and all the things happening in D.C. That makes it very political. And that's what we know from the Russiagate problem was it was a bunch of political FBI agents saying by text message, we won't let them become president. Right. And then passing off a Hillary Clinton, you know, disinformation campaign as an actual dossier from an intelligence agency.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, yeah. And last part, you know, I think one of the biggest part of this, and this is the reason why the Democrats are so afraid of a reformed intelligence agency beyond, you know, they won't be able to politicize it, beyond they won't be able to go after parishes that do Latin mass or parents who are concerned and going to school board meetings and giving the school boards a hard time about COVID policies. Beyond those things, it's the elite and the Epstein files and what's going to happen with that. So Senator Blackburn brought it in for that, and I wanted to play that one.
I want to talk to you about the Epstein case. I have worked on this for years, trying to get those records of who flew on Epstein's plane and who helped him build this international human trafficking, sex trafficking ring. Now, earlier, I urged then Chairman Durbin to subpoena those records, and I ended up being blocked by Senator Durbin and Christopher Wray. They stonewalled on this. And I know that breaking up these trafficking rings is important to President Trump. So will you work with me on this issue so we know who worked with Jeffrey Epstein in building these sex trafficking rings?
Absolutely, Senators. Child sex trafficking has no place in the United States of America. And I will do everything, if confirmed as FBI director, to make sure the American public knows the full weight of what happened in the past.
Yeah.
Yep. Interesting.
And I'm just reminding everybody, Newsweek, Daily Mail, all these places reported missing Jeffrey Epstein tapes after the New York raid on his home, where they kept the evidence there and then they left and came back and they were gone. What happened?
The FBI took them?
Accountability. Something. You know, what
Don't
happened?
Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious.
The same home where they had a painting of Bill Clinton in Monica Lewinsky's dress?
No. That's the Virgin Islands
That's
home.
The island.
Yeah, I thought that was the New York apartment.
Pretty sure it was the New York apartment.
I think maybe that was the New York apartment.
I'm almost positive.
Yeah, just might have moved it around.
Yeah.
Might have had it multiple. It might have came with him, you know.
There you go. This painting travels with me.
Yeah. I take it everywhere.
Oh, there are two of them.
So that whole question there of defending the elite from accountability on this, on the Epstein stuff, that is where a lot of the juice is on the populist movement for the right. So the more that the Democrats are seen as obstructionists to that, the more they're the defenders of the FBI's new headquarters and less on, you know, addressing real problems, especially given their, I mean, multi-decade from the 1960s to 22 till Barack Obama, skepticism in the IC was in the bloodstream of the left. They've completely given that up. That's going to splinter their factions and make that harder for them because the ideological consistency there just can't hold, in my opinion. You can't be a good faith leftist and sit there and say, oh, yeah, you know what's really important? The FBI gets a new headquarters and that there's lots of bureaucracy at the FBI. And God damn it, you know, we got to make sure that the elites don't find any accountability for Jeffrey Epstein.
Right. So I guess just to kind of start to wrap up here, if you had to take two of the three of the nominees that had hearings this week, who do you think would be like the most significant, the most important to get?
DNI is most important.
Yeah.
Right. It's directly framing the world to the president.
Yeah. It's also like the boss of all the intelligence agencies. Like they all report to the DNI. Mm-hmm. So yeah. The Tulsi confirmation is really big.
I would actually go with both intelligence people, and Cash.
So if you didn't get RFK, you'd be okay with it?
Oh, I mean, it'd be still fairly devastating, but for sure. If I had to pick two that I think would make a huge change,
all of them, these three are the most important to me, I think.
Yeah,
like for sure. It's interesting that they all kind of came in this exact same week,
but you can
they're
only
probably
pick two.
The most important.
You can only pick two,
but I'm just like saying, in the overall calculus of everything at play here, these RFK is more important, I think, just because of like what it means and kind of the future of the movement and like this coalition that's formed. I'm actually in some ways more interested in that than I am actually just like, oh, so yeah, we have RFK at the thing.
Yeah.
I'm more interested in maybe like the long-term politics of it, even though I think
what's
it's
the
important.
Symbology there?
there is a symbol that exists there. Yeah. And Tulsi, in a way, is like a symbol that is very powerful. Although I don't think her symbol is as powerful to the movement as a whole.
Right? Yeah. There's a lot of non-political people who were brought in by RFK. Tulsi doesn't bring those people in.
Yeah.
But it is as far as a change in foreign policy, a change in the IC, a change in those sorts of things, that is non-statutory, the most important.
Yeah,
by far.
Yeah. I'm actually going to change mine because maybe it's a little redundant, but I'll go Tulsi and RFK.
Nice. Yeah, that's definitely my pick. I think Tulsi, obviously, for the reasons you mentioned, and RFK, because, you know, all of this talking about spying and all this talk about, you know, the apparatus that exists in the IC, like that's under heavy scrutiny. I think that will continue to improve. You know, to what degree Cash can help with that, you know, I don't know, but obviously Tulsi really can shed a lot of light there. But I think that the health component and the capture of medicine and science is a huge problem, and like the fact that RFK has been able to bring the health topic to the political mainstream for the first time that in my life, maybe in American history, is super super important. And like, what does it matter sort of to me if we're being spied upon, if like the entire population is just falling apart at the seams, ill, you know, overweight, unable to be great, right? Like there's a real like core foundational problem that exists in this country around health, and getting to the bottom of that and getting pharma out of the way and getting, you know, figuring out what's going on with like PBMs and insurance and all the like apparatuses that exist to just enrich some of these companies that are profiting off of people being sick all the time is super, super, super important.
Something with the intelligence community stuff with the RFK, or sorry, not the Tulsi and the Cash side, is I think that a lot of these things, one is the executive orders on the disclosures of JFK files and the MLK files. We'll see where that actually ends up going. There's potentially some hiccups that are probably going to exist there. But then also things like the Epstein stuff, and maybe even we get into some P. Diddy stuff in here. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if we start to see intelligence commingling that exists in that. I think as we're moving into this new era, because we're so obviously moving into a new era, like we're in a different timeline now mm-hmm. than we were previously. Like everything is changing more so than has any ever happened really. I think those things of the past need to be unveiled for us to be able to move forward. Mm-hmm. There's a certain kind of like, okay, because like the entire population is interested in the Epstein thing for various reasons. Like there's kind of like a spectrum of where you exist on there. Some of it is just like, oh, that's so crazy. Like there's like this like pedophile ring. Oh, that's crazy. But then there's like people that have dug into it deeper. And we're so obviously that there's like intelligence ties and that this is an op that's going on. Like exposing that to the American public so that we can move into the new world into like a more transparent manner so that and people are becoming more privy to these things, I think is critically important.
Absolutely.
And just like the Epstein files is just like a symbol of that thing that's happening at large.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tip of the iceberg mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for all your hard work.
Yeah.
And thank you to all the listeners and viewers for watching. Please do like this video on YouTube. Subscribe. Leave us a comment. Who do you think the most important confirmations are that we need to get through? We'd love to hear your thoughts below the video on YouTube. And join the Discord if you want to join the conversation. We're constantly sharing news and awesome memes, and it's a great time. We appreciate you for supporting this show. Share with your friends. For David Rand, Kyle Mack, Bennett on the Buttons, I'm Joe Sheehan. This is Human Reaction, and we'll see you in the SCIF, where we're going to be talking about all of the executive orders that came down this week from the Trump administration. If you're not already a member, you can find out how to become one and get access to our exclusive content at humanreaction.com. See you guys. Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com. And remember, we're so happy to announce a brand new HR merch item. I am supportive of this onesie, baby onesie, with RFK's face on it.